Well, dear colleagues, it's with great pleasure that I accepted this invitation to come to Washington and share with you our work in Europe addressing the public health challenges of our time in a context of a continent that it is very diverse. It consists of many countries, low income, medium income, high income countries. A lot of the issues that are of great concern to you also in this session are highly relevant to what we do and what we are trying to address and to take advantage of these 20 minutes that I have, I would rather not give you the more, let's say, formal presentation that I had in mind using this PowerPoint on the new European policy for health. What I will do is I will take you through some of the key slides and then share with you some of our thoughts on how to address the issues that relate to caring and supporting marginal groups in the midst of our societies. The idea of a new European policy is the result of a realization that today public health is very different in many ways because there is an accumulation of evidence that is there, is compelling, but it is not really put into practice. There's a lot of evidence that relates to the social determinants of health. There's a lot of evidence that relates to the reasons and the factors underlying the causes of disease. Europe, like you, is suffering from a major non-communicable diseases epidemic. If you try to scratch the surface and see what's behind, there is a lot of inequality. There is a lot of factors that have to do with the kind of environments we create for our citizens to be discouraged or encouraged to pursue healthy lifestyles. It is astonishing that although the evidence today is quite strong on in the fields of health promotion, social determinants, human rights, marginalized groups, it's astonishing that many decision makers, especially those who come into the field, you know, they become ministers of health or commissioners of health and so on, they are still stuck very often to some very traditional ways of thinking. Such as, you know, the health sector is in charge and it is the health sector that will be the key actor for health. It is those who believe that the problem of behaviors which are related to non-communicable diseases, it's a matter of personal responsibility. You will find it astonishing that there are still ministers or others who will talk about individuals and say, well, there is the problem, we give them all the information and they don't follow the good advice. And yet, this year, we celebrate the 25 years of the Ottawa Charter. The Ottawa Charter for Health Promotion launched in 1986, and it was a charter that spoke very plainly about the idea of easy choices, healthy choices, creating supportive environments for health, equity, participative approaches, and health is everybody's business. Hello, that was said 25 years ago, and we are still struggling to implement those ideas today. So we try in Europe to create a coherent framework, policy framework, with best buy strategies and interventions, but connect them, not present them as a menu of disconnected items, but put them together in a way that the policymaker can actually see the whole and and have a basis to develop evidence-based comprehensive approaches. So that should be the... So we have a vision for Health 2020, and of course equity is always at the heart of this. We want to identify the best strategies and interventions, opportunities that hold a great promise, how we can act in an environment where resources are pretty scarce, but also look ahead 10 years and accelerate reducing inequalities. Now, let me give you some of the elements of this menu of core items in this new strategy, Health 2020 for Europe. We're talking not only health, we talk about health and well-being. And there is a whole lot of literature today that broadens this concept of health and actually makes it even easier to engage other sectors. We are absolutely clear that at the very top we have to have the right to health and access to care. And let me put it this way. In a Europe today, and many other continents and countries face the same issue, where the social and demographic landscape are changing dramatically, we have thousands and thousands of migrants from everywhere coming into Europe, into Western Europe, and who have the right to health, who have and should have the expectation to be cared, to be supported, to be part of those society, to be integrated. So issues of the right to health that relate to the right of health are extremely relevant today. Then the idea of people at the center. Let me also say that if you Google, you know, health strategies in the last 10 years, social strategies, you will see that the rhetoric is there. In every preamble of every document, you will find a reference to the importance of people at the center, empowerment, participation, and all that. But when you try to look for evidence of what should be done later in those plans and strategies, you will find very little. And what we try to do now is to translate these ideas. What do we really mean about providing empowering environments for people who experience the health sector, but also people out there who live in our communities? Addressing the determinants of health, there is a huge body. Last week in Rio, yet again, a global now declaration, political declaration, all about addressing the determinants of health. But again, you know, where are we with that? The evidence goes back 10 years. We keep talking about that. And the evidence on equity goes back 30 years. Then we are trying to promote what we call a whole-of-society approach, a whole-of-government approach. Health, can it be a performance indicator for whole of governments? Can we see really health being elevated higher on the political agenda beyond the boundaries, the walls of the health sector? The economics of prevention, we are looking into that. There is a lot of evidence that it is not being used. And it's very important, especially if you combine this with some other trends, like the aging of the population. And finally, capacity. You know, there are so many strategies and ideas that remain unimplemented, even those that are linked to some of the most powerful public health instruments. Take one. Take the FCTC, the Framework Convention for Tobacco. Most countries in the world have ratified the FCTC. But when you look at implementation, you will be disappointed because you will discover that, yes, parliaments said, yes, go ahead, good legislation, but implementation, enforcement, very often at the local level, very often linked to the more marginalized and vulnerable groups, is really pretty bad and pretty weak. What do we do about that? We need capacity for whole of government. We need capacity for leadership for health. We need capacity that will enable us to mobilize the stakeholders that we need, like the NGOs, to implement our health strategies. Take public health. you know, we keep talking about public health and public health, but the truth is in Europe, I don't know how you feel here in the United States, but the public health practitioners very often are the poor relatives of the health professions. Some people are sometimes even embarrassed to say that they work in public health because it doesn't sound very glamorous. And we keep on talking about health systems and health services and tertiary care and fancy technology and medical technology, but public health, and especially population-based public health, is very anemic. And this is something that we want to put emphasis on with this new strategy. I will jump to some of the issues that are relevant also to disadvantaged groups and say that in our European review on social determinants and health divide, we're actually looking very intensely now into not only the determinants but also relevant interventions that would make a difference in four groups that are socially disadvantaged. And I would like to share with you some. Which one is it? It's this one. I mean, you all know why. What are the various conditions of migration and Romas and so on that relate to vulnerability? I don't want to repeat that. An area that we look into very intensely is governance for health. This is a new major keyword for us. Governance for health is... It is all about the mechanisms, the systems that will enable different sectors, different levels of government, civil society, work for this common good, the co-production of health, as we put it. I don't have the time to show you so much the more details on that, but I'd like to jump to another issue. Because it's also related to the theme of this conference. Communities. I've been working internationally now for 20 years, and it always struck me that in every strategy that it is about action by governments, they will invariably talk about national government, sometimes regional, and then they will go into communities. They will speak about communities. But speaking about communities, which is a very important setting, we miss something which is crucial, which is the key actors in community settings. In the European region, we speak a lot about action at the local level, which is essential. We speak about the urban context, because increasingly our societies are urbanized. And we speak about the key role of local, municipal governments, a mayor. A municipal leader has a key role to play. And in fact, the whole of government approach very often is much easier at the local level. A local community, a mayor. Do you know how many mayors in Europe have migration, Romas, disadvantaged groups very high on their agenda? They are closest to people. They can actually put in place integration, social inclusion, empowerment plans that nobody can do from national level. They are closest to the citizens. They have the ear to the needs of those communities, and they can do a lot. We must be working at the local level and with local leaders. There is a healthy cities movement in Europe, and these are the issues that have been addressed. One of the issues relates to caring and supportive environments, but also healthy urban planning. How the planning, the way we design our neighborhoods, our cities, makes a huge interest, a huge difference to our lifestyles and eventually to issues like obesity and so on. But I would like to end by just making a reference to some of the most debatable and intensely divisive sometimes issues today in Europe when we speak about public health in the future. Everybody agrees that we have a demographic and social change, the NCD epidemic. In Europe, in eastern part, there is a rise in HIV. We have a big problem of the resistant tuberculosis and antimicrobial resistance. And there is a big issue of strengthening health systems. But We have a financial crisis. You probably read in the news every day, it's a major crisis. It's not about one country, it's about many countries. So choices are very tough in the midst of a financial crisis. And unfortunately, many governments, when crisis hits, the first services they actually discontinue are prevention services, social support services, welfare services, and so on. Then it is the whole issue of understanding what it means to work on health in all policies. What does it really mean? And here is the major debate, because some people say the health sector, the core business, the key role of the Minister of Health, and the beyond is very difficult for us to tackle. But on the other hand, we need to find a way to speak the language of other sectors, understand where they come from, and connect with some policy platforms that have nothing to do with health. Let's face it, health is not a key word in many other professions. But health and the determinants of health are highly relevant to the activities of many other sectors. So we are struggling with that. I mentioned earlier the issue of behaviors and the issue of personal responsibility versus social responsibility. Emerging promising areas of work relate to assets for health. How do you build resilience in communities? This is hugely important when you talk about disadvantaged groups. Why certain communities can withstand change and trouble much better than other communities. Social capital, networking, health literacy, and so on are highly relevant in that context. We are putting a lot of emphasis in those. Then we try to apply what we call the equity, gender, and human rights lens in what we do. How do we do that? A big debate in Europe today is also about, I don't know if you are familiar with the gradient approach to social determinants and equity, meaning that most people, when they think about inequalities, they go immediately and they think about disadvantaged, marginalized, poor groups, and they forget the rest of the population. A gradient approach is when, in a proportioned way, you look at every social stratum and you see what interventions you should do to invest into health promotion. It's a much better approach, and it is a much more even approach if you want to reduce inequalities. And lastly, as I said, the discovery or the rediscovery of the role of local governments. In some countries, like in the UK, for example, public health now is back into local governments. Hey, that's great news. You know, at the end of the 1800s, urban planners and public health people were working together. Then they went their separate ways. Now they're coming back again. Maybe we are going to see more change in that respect. And my last slide is this paradox. It also comes it made me think about it also from the last major conference in Rio. We keep talking to the converted. You know, I keep going for years to one conference after the other, listening to Michael Marmot and to all these people, and it's all the public health crowd which is convinced out of their ears about the social determinants and what needs to be done. But we don't talk to the people we want to make friends with, the sectors, the levels of government, to take those issues and debate them in party conferences, in other sectors, in other journals. We keep repeating and playing the same music. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Smarz. We had hoped that we would have had Lord Philip Hunt here to speak to us from the UK, but unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, he is involved in a critical health bill that is now moving from the House of Commons to the House of Lords. He is leading the opposition forces in that struggle and also has a major input in amendments to that bill, so he is unable to be with us this afternoon. We are very fortunate, however, to have Professor Richard Parrish also from the UK. He's a leading authority in public health for many years. He started as a practitioner and then was director of health promotion activities and soon moved into several academic posts, including professor of public health at the University of Sheffield in England. He led the development of the UK Health Development Agency, the government's agency for health. He has had a long-time links to the World Health Organization as a consultant and was involved in drafting the Ottawa Charter that Dr. Soares just referred to, and subsequently in helping to produce the European Health Report in 2005. Always at the leading edge of health development, he is now the Chief Executive Officer of the Royal Society for Public Health, which I'm very proud to be a member, and a leading NGO in health policy, public health, in the UK, and is well known for international training initiatives and a society with close links for many years to the APHA. So I'm very pleased to have Dr. Parrish with us this afternoon.